The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Reoccurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but... But what? Something different is filled in every week. But what about suffering? But how could a loving God send people to hell? That has been our tagline now for most of the 6 years and several months we've been on the air. In fact, the Bob Siegel Show is in the midst of its seventh season. Welcome to the best of the Bob Siegel Show. My voice is pre-recorded today. I hope you're having a restful Easter Sunday, celebrating the resurrection of our Lord. I'm enjoying some time off with my daughter and son-in-law, which is why I am not live. As a matter of fact, most of our program will be made up of repeat clips from past years. Now, before you clench your fist as you hear that dreadful word repeat, please be advised, I did not just arbitrarily grab stuff from the shelf and slap it on the air. We took time to select some of the segments that have received the most favorable comments over the years. Although talk shows today are as numerous as the sand on the seashore, it was always my intention to do a different kind of program. The theme? Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. We premiered on our sister station, KPRZ, but in only a matter of months, KCBQ opened up some time, which excites me, because on KCBQ I do not speak to an exclusively Christian audience. In fact, from the beginning, we designed the Bob Siegel Show as a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters. At first, I visualized a program that did nothing but take phone call and email questions about the Bible. As time went on, the program morphed into all kinds of new directions, and today in its present format, the Bob Siegel Show is a variety program made up of music, satirical sketches, debates, political monologues, and yes, we do still spend a great deal of time on Bible questions. An added perk is that I have been honored to interview some well-known guests, including two of my own favorite talk show hosts, Michael Medved and Hugh Hewitt. But that was just the beginning. Go to my website, bobsiegel.net, if you would like to download some past programs, and you'll see a list that includes David Barton, Duncan Hunter, Hollywood director David Zucker, Judge Roy Moore, Rob Bell, Waleed Shubat, Phyllis Chesler, Victor Mordecai, Lori Lewis, who sang with the revised Mamas and the Papas, and has also guest hosted the program many times, many other guests as well. But I don't only interview the people I agree with. There have been all kinds of informal on-air debates with atheists, including Dr. Robert Price of the Jesus Seminar, Dan Barker of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, the late Phil Paulson of Fundamentalists Anonymous, Brian Fleming, who created an outrageous website called blasphemetheholyspirit.com, and Bart Ehrman, the famous Bible critic, a lot of others as well. For the first 2.5 years of the Bob Siegel Show, I was joined frequently by co-host Sharon Couchard. I still connect with Sharon as a dear friend, but she stepped down from the radio to devote more time to her family. Sharon was sharp as a whip and a ton of fun to have in the studio. When she left, I decided that no one person could fill her shoes. So now I bring on a series of regular but rotating co-hosts, including the before-mentioned Lori Lewis, Greg Jarvis, who calls in from Missouri, and film critic Mark Boobium. This first clip is from the very first Bob Siegel Show. It premiered on KPRZ Sunday, January the 2nd, 2005. Sharon and I were having fun with a news story, and we used it to premiere a feature that we entitled College Campus Coping Kit. What do you think of this music?
I like it.
It is pleasant to listen to.
It is.
Do you have any critique of the music at all?
The music is fine.
I can't really understand the words too well.
The reason you can't understand the words is that there are no words. They're singing very earnestly and very pleasantly, but they're not actually saying anything. This is true of what is taught on some, not all, but some college campuses. And I say this as somebody who has a secular degree from San Jose State University. I'm not anti-university, but there are interesting things going on at our universities, and we're going to eventually highlight some of them. This one comes from Fox News over the internet. That's our source. It was from the University of New Hampshire. A student was kicked out of his dormitory room for posting flyers suggesting that women take the stairs in order to get a little exercise and avoid gaining weight. Now, evidently, Sharon, this was somebody who put up a little notice on the bulletin board. He said it in a tongue-in-cheek fashion.
What did it actually say?
Well, he had a concern. He felt that some people were taking the elevator up just a couple of flights, and if they had taken the stairs instead, then those that needed to get to the 8th or 9th or 10th floor wouldn't have to wait as long. You know how long an elevator takes.
Right.
So he puts this up in a tongue-in-cheek fashion, and he writes this. 9 out of 10 freshman girls gain 10 to 15 pounds, but there is something you can do about it. If you live below the 6th floor, take the stairs. And when he writes U, he uses the letter U instead of Y-O-U. I guess he was saving space on the paper for that. So if you live below the 6th floor, take the stairs. Not only will you feel better about yourself, but you will also be saving us time and won't be sore on the eyes. So
I guess
he could say he was complimenting their appearance, but I can see some of the women going, why, that male chauvinist pig.
Yeah.
Well,
so what happened?
He maintained, the student, that his language was a joke, and that it did arise out of students' frustration with residents who take the elevator up and down one floor, thus prolonging the wait that people have for greater distances. This is what was done. And even if you're out there, people, you may be a believer, you may be a non-believer, you may be an atheist. I think we might all agree that the reaction of this college campus was a little bit harsh. First of all, he was evicted from the dorm. Mm. Second of all, he was put on probation until May of 2006.
My gosh.
And he's going to be forced to participate in a sexual harassment program and write a 3,000-word paper on the program. This is for writing a little tongue-in-cheek note. I mean, can't people just have a sense of humor? Have we gotten to the point?
Yeah. Bob, I think this gentleman needs a little help. His behavior is, he's behaving badly. That's all I can say.
Well, he's not behaving in a politically correct
fashion.
That's
exactly right.
Sure.
And we did promise that we would do that during this segment, that we would help people behave politically correct.
How to navigate in a politically correct world so we could rewrite part of
this. I think so. Yeah,
him?
I think we should rewrite this.
Well, let's take a look at this. First, he says 9 out of 10 freshman girls. Well, I think it's offensive saying freshman because that's too male. So,
yeah, fresh.
And he doesn't want to say fresh woman, fresh person. Would that
first
be more?
Fresh person girls.
But then girls, that's derogatory because they're college students. They don't want to be thought. So fresh person women.
Okay. Okay, we got
fresh
that part.
Fresh person women can gain.
But what about the 9 out of 10? Where is he coming up with that?
Nine out of ten women.
He's quoting a statistic. It should be coming from the New England Journal, I think, of Medicine to give it some credibility.
Okay, according to the New England Journal of Medicine, that may not be an accurate source, but this is a college campus. So when have they been accurate these days? So he could probably get away with that. Mm-hmm. Usually if something's written down, people believe it's true. Okay, then he talks about gaining pounds. Well, that probably doesn't sound too good. A more politically correct way to phrase that would be 9 out of 10 fresh person women can add a 10 to 15 surplus
to
that's their
good.
Physique. Doesn't that just,
I says, like that
it
much
just
better.
Says it in a much nicer
now,
way.
Now, don't you think he should also have a little bit of a diatribe about the benefits of exercise?
Okay.
Okay, so that would also lend some credibility to
Well,
this.
He did talk about the benefits of the exercise because he was saying that they would be easier on our eyes, but
that is such a
Well, he should say, you will look even lovelier than you already do. You can't even call a woman lovely today, can you?
No, he should talk about how we're going to get a better heart out of this, aerobic exercise,
right.
Not what we're going to look like.
Right, and then if everybody did this, there would be less people in line for Hillary's health care plan if it ever comes back. And so if we throw health, he says something about the importance of health care, even if it's unrelated, he's going to get off scot-free.
But don't forget, it takes a village, right?
It takes a village. Okay. Well, I think we did pretty well for this, fellow. You know.
So, okay, how is this going to sound now? I want to wrap it up.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Can you do that?
According to the New England Journal of Medicine, 9 out of 10 fresh person women obtain a surplus of 10 to 15 pounds to their physique. Not only will you feel better about yourself, but you'll be putting less people in line for the free health care, which we all need to deserve. Because, by the way, I'm a Democrat. Okay.
That's all we even needed to say.
If he'd have just said he was a Democrat, if he'd have said at the beginning, this is from a Democrat or this is from a liberal, then he could have worded the rest of it any way he wanted to.
We'll be right back with more from the best of The Bob Siegel Show.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to the best of the Bob Siegel Show. One of the more enjoyable tasks of this weekly radio program finds me writing satirical sketches and then using local actors to fill in the cast. Sometimes I myself am one of the actors, but often I used to stick poor Sharon into the middle of an outrageous political interview. In this next piece, she interviews a virus. Yes, you heard me correctly. Believe it or not, a science convention, true story, a science convention in Texas had some participants go on record to say that viruses have as much of a right to the planet as human beings. Political correctness gone amok. Well, we just couldn't resist turning this one on its head. Here is Sharon Cashard interviewing Vinny the Virus.
And now it's our pleasure to introduce a new guest to the Bob Siegel Show, one of the activists behind these protests from the Diseases Under Major Banishment Union, or DUMB Union for short. Please welcome Vinny the Virus. Nice to have you on our program, Mr. Virus.
Thanks for having me.
Well, having you is the subject at hand. People do not want to have you, and they don't want to have any other virus either. So what exactly is the purpose of your organization?
I'm glad you asked that, Sharon. The Diseases Under Major Banishment Union is both a reaction to ignorance and a protest. We object to the way viruses are being portrayed by the media.
How exactly do you feel you're being portrayed, Mr. Virus?
Kind of negatively. To watch the news these days, you'd think there was something wrong with virus and disease.
Wait a minute. Are you actually suggesting that diseases aren't bad? You're claiming diseases are good?
Who's to say what's good or bad? Those are relative terms. What's bad for one individual might be good to another.
Okay, Mr. Virus. Give me one example of sickness being a good thing.
It keeps kids home from school at times. Some kids really like that. They get to lay around and watch TV.
What about when sicknesses actually kill?
Oh, I knew you were going to bring that one up. You right-wingers are always complaining about death.
Well, it's a pretty obvious thing to bring up, wouldn't you say?
You want to bring up something obvious? How about George Bush?
No, we're not going there. No, you're not going to change the subject. I want you to address this question. How can dying from a disease be a good thing? Please explain that to our listening audience.
Dinosaurs died from disease. Do you miss the dinosaurs? Would you like to see a Tyrannosaurus Rex on the freeway? Either you'd get eaten or you'd get stuck in a traffic jam. Either way, you'd be late for work.
Mr. Virus, I was under the impression that other factors destroyed the dinosaurs.
Oh, really? Were you there at the time?
No.
Well, I was. Or at least my forefathers were, before they mutated into me and my associates. My mutation is a good thing. Denying mutation denies evolution, and denying evolution violates separation between church and state.
Oh, my gosh. Mr. Virus, we aren't here to discuss church or state or dinosaurs. We're here to discuss the fact that diseases are dangerous.
Dangerous, are we?
Of course you're dangerous. Diseases have been responsible for virtual genocide. Look how many Native Americans were wiped out when European explorers came to American shores with smallpox and other diseases like that.
Well, don't blame me. Blame that guy with the boats who was trying to prove the world was round to a bunch of idiots who couldn't figure that out for themselves.
I don't think Columbus intended to bring about genocide. That was your doing.
Oh, you want to talk about genocide, lady? Okay, let's talk about it. How about that Hippocratic Oath? Doctors taking vows to destroy all disease? If that's not genocide, what is?
Well, doctors have no choice. They have to kill diseases. Otherwise, diseases will kill us.
Oh, lady, give me a break. How many times have you caught the common cold? That's a virus, and you're still alive, aren't you?
Listen, even a common cold can get worse. Doesn't that prove that any kind of disease is a potential threat?
When you say that all disease is a threat, you sound very racist.
You are a threat.
A threat to people? Maybe. But not to the entire world. You aren't the only ones on this planet. Viruses have a right to be here, too.
Wait a minute. So viruses are equal to people? That's what you're saying?
Oh, I don't think we're equal to people. I think we're superior to people. Look at the killing done by humanity. You deserve to be wiped out by diseases.
So you admit to wanting to wipe us out?
Well, sure. But not in a racist way like you humans would do it. We don't hate people because of their skin color or gender or culture. We kill all people equally without discrimination.
Yes, you do, and that's a crime.
It may be a crime, but at least it isn't a hate crime.
Okay, all right. This is over. Thank you very much, Mr. Virus, for joining us. I would offer to shake hands, but I don't want to catch anything.
Oh, that's funny. That's really funny.
Well, any woman brave enough to interview a virus could interview anybody. Not long afterwards, Sharon took on none other than Iranian President Ahmadinejad.
Mr. Ahmadinejad, welcome to our program.
Oh, goody, we're on.
Now, I should say I was very unimpressed with Mike Wallace's interview, but unlike Wallace, I won't pull any punches because, personally, I think you're pure evil.
That wasn't a bit nice.
Maybe not, but you did tell the United Nations to take a hike. Why did you even bother talking to them in the first place? Why did you promise to consider dismantling your nuclear program?
Delays, delays.
So you admit that any discussion with the UN is just a facade to cover up your illegitimate programs.
But it has to look legal.
Okay, let's get serious. How do you feel about Israel?
Gee whiz, that silly place irritates me so.
Israel irritates you so? What are you planning on doing about it?
Oh, I'm going to blow it up.
I thought you said you weren't building nuclear weapons. Blow it up with what?
The Illudium Q-36 Explosive Space Modulator.
Isn't it true that the Jews have been in that land for 4,000 years?
Technicalities, technicalities.
So you really plan on killing off every single Jew?
Isn't it delightful?
You could live with yourself after genocide?
At long last, my dream come true.
Was there ever a time when you treated the Jews nicely? How did you deal with them before you became president of Iran?
I used to sell them door to door.
You're sick. You know that?
You have made me very angry. Very angry indeed.
Okay, enough about Israel. Any words for President Bush?
Now, let's all play fair.
Supposing he plays fair by destroying your nuclear weapons before they're completed.
Well, back to the old drawing board.
Any last words for us Americans?
Brace yourself for immediate disintegration.
That's all, folks.
But there's been a lot more to our program than interviews. The Bob Siegel Show has featured a whole ensemble of its own loony characters, including the lovable Smiley Miley. Smiley Miley's debut was based on a real news story. We did have fun with it, but the subject matter is not fun at all. A few years ago, the terrorist organization Hamas actually developed a summer camp for kids and perfect inspiration for Smiley Miley.
Hey, kids. Summer's coming to a rapid end, but it isn't too early to start thinking about next summer. Reserve your spot now and be where the action is. That's right. Hamas, the grandest growing group of Gaza, presents Summer Camp 2006. Swimming lessons, horseback riding, potato sack races, Jew hating, and other summertime fun. Our comfortable facilities help to make your stay a welcome one, while the patriotic green flags of Hamas in the background also make your stay a focused one. Camp songs include "In the Good Old Summertime," "Where Have All the Blasphemers Gone?" and "Other Religions Are for Sissies." Arts and crafts classes include painting, ceramics, basket weaving, matzo poisoning, and first-year bomb assembly. You may enter our camp as a boy, but you'll return as a man. You'll be challenged and stretched with teamwork and rigorous sporting activities. Shooting rapids, climbing trees, stalking infidels, and of course, beating last year's record for the fastest suicide. Some of our kids like to save that one for last.
Uncle Omar, when I grow up, will I learn to kill as many Zionists as you?
That's my boy. Study up, work hard. There's no telling what you might do.
Hamas Summer Camp. Having us next to Israel is the next best thing to no Israel at all.
We'll return to the best of the Bob Siegel Show on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Good sense, ill sense, crippling mankind. Dead kings, many things I can't define. Old Cajun spots, wagons, clutter your mind. In the sense of temperaments, the color of time.
Who cares what games we choose? Little to win, but nothing to lose.
You're listening to the best of the Bob Siegel Show, celebrating over 4 years on KCBQ, Intelligent Talk Radio 1170. Smiley Miley is not the only popular character. We are also interrupted frequently, and usually without warning, from Disclaimer Dan. This news story came out a couple of years ago in California. the vortex of unusual news stories.
And you just gotta love Arnold, our conservative Republican governor. I take away the playtime. That works so much better. Yeah, well, sometimes it does. Sometimes I'm not saying every single kid needs to be spanked. Every kid is different. Kids respond to different things. But there's always that feisty little tyke who weighs the brief timeout that's looming and threatening over his little head with the joy, the utter joy he's going to have at pulling Susie's hair. Now, you can use all the psychology in the world. If Johnny wants to pull Susie's hair, he's going to pull Susie's hair. Johnny, if you do that again, you get a timeout. Johnny, I'm asked. Johnny, you're going to get a timeout. Oh, not the timeout, Mom. Please, not the timeout. I'll be good, Mom. Yeah, kids are scared to death of that timeout. Now, I'll bet almost every person listening to their program right now was spanked as a kid, and you turned out fine. You turned out just fine, despite the fact that your parents ignored psychologists like Dr. Spock.
When Bob Siegel says that psychology won't solve the problem of discipline in the home, he doesn't mean to imply that psychology has no place in the home whatsoever.
Thanks, Dan. We always appreciate the assistance of Disclaimer Dan.
As a matter of fact, Bob does believe that a psychology book can be extremely helpful when children are throwing temper tantrums, especially if it's a good thick book with a strong hard cover. Eager mothers can hold the book at a 45-degree angle from Johnny's little behind, giving him one last warning. If the warning still isn't heeded, apply the book with such force that it blisters his posterior for a whole month.
Thanks, Dan. I think we get it.
You're listening to the Best of the Bob Siegel Show. Last October, as the election was winding down, we had a lot of fun with then-candidate, now-president, Barack Obama.
Welcome to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I'm your host, Regis Philbin. Our first guest today is Barack Obama. How you doing today, Barack?
Hi, Regis. Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a U.S. Senator from Illinois and the nominee of the Democratic Party for the 2008 presidential election.
Presidential election? Quite an ambition. I'll bet you'd like to earn some money for your campaign.
Sure would, Regis. With campaign finance reform, I have little choice but to do it this way.
Well, this is as good a way as any. The money is still green. We'll start with an easy one. For $1,000, what is the capital of Colorado?
C.
No, not the capital letter, Barack. The capital city.
Oh, yes, of course. The capital is Denver.
No, Barack, you're supposed to wait for the choices. That was correct, but you need to wait for the choices. That's okay. We just won't count that one. Let's put a fresh question on the board. For $1,000, a few weeks ago, Russia attacked Georgia. Exactly what is Georgia? A, the state between Florida and South Carolina. B, the theme song from Designing Women. C, one of four singers in a female version of the Beatles. D, a former part of the Soviet Union freed after the Cold War.
Wow, Regis, that's a tough question. You know, can I take a second to tell you a story about my grandmother?
I'm afraid that's not going to help you tonight, Barack. You're going to need to answer the question.
Regis, you know, I think I'm going to have to take a lifeline.
Okay, which lifeline would you like to take?
Let's poll the audience.
Okay, audience, cast your votes now. 90% say D, a former part of the Soviet Union. 80% said they think you're pretty stupid. Never mind.
I guess I'll have to go with the audience.
The audience is correct. You just won $1,000. Now, for $10,000. In 1971, a terrorist group tried to blow up our Capitol building. What was the name of this terrorist group? A, Al-Qaeda. B, Hamas. C, the Weathermen. Or D, the Letterman.
Regis, I don't know where you're getting these questions, but I think I'm going to have to phone a friend. my buddy Bill Ayers knows all about terrorism.
Let's get Bill Ayers on the phone right now.
Hello?
Am I talking with Bill Ayers?
Speaking.
Hi, Bill. This is Regis Philbin. How are you tonight?
Doing great, Regis.
I'm here with your friend Barack Obama. He already has $1,000 and he's going for $10,000.
Fantastic. I know a few groups that would love a donation.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. First, he has to earn the money. Go ahead, Barack, starting now.
Hey, Bill, that terrorist group you were part of, what was it called? A. Al-Qaeda?
You don't have to name them, Barry.
B. Hamas?
I already know the name of the group.
C. The Weathermen?
Sheesh, what an imbecile.
Or D. The Letterman?
It's C. Weathermen.
Are you sure?
Positive, you moron.
Gee, thanks, Bill. Okay, Regis. C. The Weathermen. Final answer.
C is correct! You just won $10,000! Generally speaking, the first half of our program each week is political and satirical. The second half takes a more tempered tone as we explore the many questions associated with Christianity. People ask their questions by email or by phone, like some of these phone conversations from the past, still relevant as ever. We have Lise from El Cajon. How are you doing, Lise?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Bob?
Doing all right.
I have a question.
Sure.
I have a friend who is not a believer yet, but I talk to her a lot about things that are happening in my life, and over the last probably year or so, you know, she'll start to talk to me about God, not Jesus yet, but God, and she started to say things to me about praying, and I think that's really cool, but I have a question for you about how does God hear prayers of non-believers?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, obviously, he's God, so he hears everybody's prayer. When we're believers, we have this special promise that Jesus intercedes for us. In the Old Testament days, when somebody wanted to have a relationship with God, God showed them how difficult it was, not because he didn't want to have a relationship with them, but because of their sin. And the high priest would make an animal sacrifice and go into the temple, into the Holy of Holies, where you've seen the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, where the real ark of God was, and he'd intercede for the people. Well, now in the New Testament, we're told that Jesus Christ, by virtue of his death on the cross, provided the sacrifice, and then he continues to intercede for us as our high priest. So we have all these wonderful guarantees about what's going on after we've already given our life to Christ. Now, when somebody who has not given their life to Christ yet makes a prayer, God still hears them. And to the degree that that prayer might lead the person closer to God, he might even answer that prayer to leave a trail of breadcrumbs for them. But obviously, God's greatest concern is to get that person into a relationship with them. Now, I don't know what kind of prayers this woman is asking for. I prayed for some things before I was a Christian, and some of them God gave me, but obviously me praying that I have a good day or me praying that my car doesn't break down is not as important to God as me getting saved. But anything God can do in my life to show me that he's out there, that he loves me, that prayer is a good thing, that's all very positive. So if this woman is praying and if God is answering her prayers, that's great. If she were to start saying things like, well, Lise, I've had some prayers answered, so everything's already okay, and I don't need Christ. At that point, we'd say, well, let's not presume upon God's goodness. In Romans, Paul tells us that we shouldn't presume upon the goodness and mercy of God, because the goodness and mercy is there in the hopes that we'll repent. Repentance, of course, meant turning from our selfish natures and turning toward God. And so God doing good things in our life shouldn't be an excuse for us to not want to be obedient to God. So I wouldn't get concerned unless she was using her prayers or answered prayers as an excuse to not become a Christian. But in the meantime, if God's doing something in her life, that's great. And no, somebody doesn't have to be a Christian for God to do something in their lives.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of how I've been feeling about it. But I had mixed feelings encouraging. I mean, I want to encourage her to know Jesus first and foremost. But on the other hand, I don't want to not encourage her to have this conversation that she's having with God, because her prayers are pretty meaningful, that she's been praying and he is answering prayers, and she's even said that, you know, to me.
Right.
So to me, it's evidence of God working in her life. And I know when I came to know the Lord, it was kind of a dance back and forth. There was activity that took place on both parts. So I kind of want to encourage her, and yet I was having mixed feelings because I thought, well, gosh, I don't know. You know, I don't want to encourage her to talk to God and skip Jesus at the same time.
No, I think you're doing fine. Be your friend. And you don't want to get really pushy with Christianity anyway. But at such a time where she might be open to it, I think a good segue into the conversation is to say, you know, it sounds like with your prayers, some really good doors have already opened with God. And in other words, be affirming. Mm-hmm. And of course, that would be genuine, because there's nothing ungenuine about that. That is something she should be affirmed for. And then say, however, you know, I was wondering if you'd be interested in taking the ultimate door and the ultimate plunge. And it's not just a matter of you praying, but God wants to have a relationship with you, and God wants to speak to you too. And God wants to adopt you as his daughter. And if you had been the only person in this world, Jesus would have come and died on the cross just for you. There's so many positive things to say about Christianity. I think people have gotten so turned off with the heaven, hell stuff that at times we get afraid to say anything. But I think there's all kinds of ways where you could be very affirming to what she's already doing and just continue down that positive road with her. She might be a lot more receptive to it than you think.
You know, she might be. That's really helpful, Bob, actually, because that's what I was wondering, what to do next. You know, I feel like just our conversations have moved her a long way over the last maybe year and a half, maybe even 2 years. And, you know, I just wanted to go the next step, but I haven't known how to make that next jump with her.
Well, Elise, let me encourage you. It sounds like you've been doing a great job, and the fact that you haven't been pushy has probably gone a long way with her. It's probably been good that you haven't been trying to jump into Christianity every time you talk to her. But as her friend, you may have earned the right and credibility to say a little bit more now.
Yeah, well, and she's watched, you know, God work in my life and definitely watched, mm-hmm. you know, my conversion change me. So she's seen the fruit. She
sure.
said it's a real thing. And so, you know, we're operating from a pretty good basis for doing that. That's really helpful. Thank you so much, Bob.
You are welcome. Thank you so much for calling in.
Have a great day.
You too, Lise. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Welcome back to the best of the Bob Siegel Show. The remainder of our program will feature more selected phone calls. And we have Kathy from San Diego. How are you doing, Kathy?
I'm doing well. I have a question for you, Bob.
I've
heard that Christians state that what the Bible teaches is the only answer and the only religion that's correct. Therefore, all other religions are wrong. But other religions, like Christianity, I think are based on striving for morality and treating humans with love and even preparing for death and what's to follow. So are Christians saying that these religions are invalid?
Yeah, well, first of all, Christians sometimes say things in tactless ways, and they don't defend what they're saying. It is true that we have a lot of different religions that have different views of immortality. And where religions are similar, most religions are similar is that they do all have a high concept of morality and teach that we should be unselfish in the way we treat other people. Where they differ, and where they differ dramatically, is in their concept of God. For instance, some of the stronger sects of Hinduism, they may use the word God,
and I as a Christian may use the word God, and people would think, well, okay, well, if there's only one God, they're talking about the same thing. But the Hindu view of God, and they call their God Brahman, to them, God just means existence. They're not talking about a thinking, feeling, sentient, living being who's going to hold us accountable, who created us. They would just say God is the trees, God is the mountains. So, for example, if I was taking a walk with a Hindu, and of course I respect the Hindu's right to believe whatever they want, of course, but if we were to look at a tree and I were to say God made that tree, and he were to say, no, God is that tree, those are pretty different views of God. In fact, they probably couldn't possibly be more different. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So these different religions are saying different things about God. Now, if they're saying different things and the different things they're saying contradict, then if two ideas contradict themselves, they really can't both be true. A lot of times when people approach the subject of religion, they start, nobody ever says it this way, and they don't usually feel this way consciously, but they're assuming that religions are made-up ideas and they're comforting fantasies. And so if it's, now if that were true, then sure, we'd say, well, why Christianity? Why not Judaism? Why not Buddhism? Why not Islam? It's like choosing between the Lord of the Rings and the Chronicles of Narnia. They're both fantasies. Just pick the one you want. My question would be, why start with that assumption? The people who started these different world religions certainly didn't claim that they were opinions or mere ideas. They claimed to actually be getting revelation from above. So if they're making that claim and the religions contradict, they can't all be true. Now, that doesn't mean, Kathy, that I would ever want to see laws passed in America where everybody's forced to become a Christian. I believe in freedom of religion. I believe in freedom from religion. If somebody wants to live as an atheist or a humanist and not be religious at all, that's fine. I'm not here to tell other people how to live, and I don't respect people less if they're not Christians. But if asked, do I believe Christianity is the religion that's true, I would say, well, they can't all be true, since they all contradict. So let's see if any of them have evidence that they are true. And Christianity has this evidence. Now, that was quite a mouthful. Let me give you a chance to respond.
Okay, well, that leads into what I was thinking about, is that if you're saying that there can only be one truth, then what basis does a Christian have for saying that their beliefs are morally superior or exclusively right over other religions?
Right. Well, you're asking an excellent question, Kathy, and that's the question everybody ought to be asking. And there's actually a pretty good answer. First of all, out of the major, there's millions of offshoots of religions, but out of the major world religions, Christianity is the only one that is even offering evidence that it's true. The other religions are pretty much asking people to just follow them by faith. But Christianity is actually very integrated in history. And the focal point of Christianity is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is one of the most well-attested events of ancient history. Some 500 people saw him rise from the dead. And there were even writers, historians in those days, contemporaries of the apostles who wrote the New Testament, who were not Christians themselves, who wrote about Jesus. From non-Christian sources, we can read, for instance, from Josephus, that Jesus did miracles and rose from the dead. We can read from the Jewish Talmud, and the Jewish nation, at least the leaders in the Jewish nation, didn't like Jesus at all. They were very hostile toward him, and yet even they verified that he did miracles. He was talked about by a number of years later by the Roman historian Tacitus. There are other examples too, but that's where I would begin. The resurrection of Jesus is a well-attested historical event.
So,
what do you think?
I mean, not being a religious scholar, I don't know, but so within Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Muslim, so there's no this written evidence of their beliefs and their faith?
Well, they have scriptures as we have scriptures, but let's use Islam as an example. That's a religion people are talking about a lot today. The Quran comes from one source. There was a man named Muhammad who claimed that God spoke to him in a cave. Now, he himself never wrote one word, but he supposedly memorized what God told him and went around reciting it. And then after he died, his words were written down. So we have one source. With the Bible, we have in the New Testament alone 26 different documents. With the Gospels of Jesus, we have three different eyewitnesses. And then the fourth gospel, Luke was an actual historian who was sponsored by a Roman dignitary named Theophilus to look into this unusual Christian movement. He interviewed many people and compiled many sources. And then there were other writers in the New Testament as well, like the Apostle Paul and James and Jude. So we have a variety of sources. If you put the entire Bible together, Old and New Testament, we're talking about 66 different documents written over a period of some 2,000 years by people who didn't know each other. And yet they were all claiming the same God. He had the same personality, the same standards. Kathy, what would be the likelihood of putting even three people into one room together and getting them to agree on anything about God? Here we have over 40 people who lived over 2,000 years, and they're completely agreeing, and God always has the same personality, the same message, the same standards. That, along with the fact that there are many prophecies in the Bible that have been fulfilled. Israel today exists. This is the third Israel that we've had. The first Israel was set up prior to King David and was destroyed by the Babylonians. The second Israel was set up because the Babylonians, after they were conquered by the Persians allowed them to go back and rebuild their land. That's never happened in history before, where a nation was destroyed and was actually allowed to return and rebuild their homeland. And then the Romans destroyed Israel, and in 1948, Israel became a nation again. That would be pretty incredible just because it happens. But the prophet Isaiah in the 11th chapter predicted that it would happen many years ago. So these are just examples, of course. And of course, most people are not Bible scholars, but these are some things that you could look into. There's just an abundance of evidence. Now, you compare that to the Quran, where we have this one man, Muhammad, who claims to have met God. And then not only that, but Muhammad doesn't even claim that the Quran is an alternative to the Bible. He claims the Quran is a sequel to the Bible. He lived about 600 years after Christianity began. And the Quran talks about the Bible. It talks about Jesus. It talks about the prophets. It claims to be worshiping the same God. So they've actually made our quest much easier. If the Quran admits that the Bible was here first and says the Bible is the word of God and claims to be a companion, but if in fact the Quran and the Bible start to contradict, well, then which one would have to go? I'll give you a chance to respond.
Excuse me. What about the religions prior to the resurrection of Christ? So were all these people wrong, misguided?
Well, it would depend on what religion we're talking about. Sometimes there are people that just have a general sense that there's some kind of God out there. If we're talking about whether a person's sincere ignorance of God might be taken into consideration by God on Judgment Day, I think that's possible, and I think that's an interesting thing to ponder. So we're not necessarily making a statement that God's going to reject somebody because they never heard of him. But if we're just asking the question, which religion happens to be true, that's a different question. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this is an excellent question you're asking. Let me give you a chance to respond, or is that raising further questions, or do you want to just chew on this one for a while? Or what?
Yeah, I think... that's a whole lot to think. You had good answers for all of my questions.
Yeah. Well, listen, I would like to let us have your address. I've written a book that's designed for people that ask those questions. And some of the things that I just kind of quickly went through when I mentioned these different historians, you can actually see their quotes. It's footnoted. You could look it up. We'd be happy to send you a free copy of that if you'd like it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure we get that to you. Kathy, wonderful question. You sound very open-minded, and I really appreciate your phone call.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
Thank you for calling in. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
We have Lorene from San Jose, California. How you doing, Lorene?
Doing fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
Well, sometimes when I get in discussions with friends, they'll say things to me like, you know, but Christianity is really negative. It's a negative kind of faith. I mean, people are sinners. They have to come up to an impossible standard. And I'm a good person just because I make mistakes. I don't see why that makes me a sinner. And what's wrong with the way I am? What's wrong with the way most people are?
Right.
God loves us, so what's the deal?
Okay, well, first of all, when we get into such conversations, I think it's always good to find a place where we might agree first. And first of all, Christians, at least Christians today, and this is probably true of Christians in any day, do have a tendency to be very negative. And Christianity is supposed to be a positive message. Gospel means good news. Now, unfortunately, because the good news is that we can be forgiven of our sin, if people don't think that sin is an issue and they don't think they need forgiveness, then it doesn't sound like good news. It sounds like judgmental news. So the way I like to put it, the gospel has an evil twin brother. The good news has an evil twin brother called the bad news. And if people don't understand the bad news, they won't understand the good. Now, part of the problem with the word sin, Lorene, is it's such an archaic word, and people don't really know what it means. But the Bible defines the word sin as selfishness. In the 7th chapter of Matthew, Jesus said that the summary of following God's law was to treat people in an unselfish way. It's what we commonly call the golden rule. Treat other people as you want to be treated. Well, if sin is defined in the Bible as breaking God's laws, which it is, and if God's law is summarized in treating people unselfishly, we then have a good workable definition for sin, selfishness. And I think you'll find that if you use the word selfishness rather than sin, people can relate to it better. When people think of sin, they think, oh, you mean what, smoking, drinking, partying, having sex, some of those things the Bible condemns. The Bible doesn't condemn, on the other hand, everything that people think is a sin. So that is where I would start. Does that make sense?
It does. And I kind of try to take their approach at saying, well, do you think I'm a negative person, or am I treating you negatively? And they say, oh, no, but you're my friend.
That's a very excellent point, because you're really giving them a personal illustration and saying, well, give me an example. And by being their friend, in a sense, you've earned the right to be heard. And they know that you're not treating them like some guy standing on the street corner yelling and screaming about hellfire and brimstone and handing out tracts. So that gives you a lot of credibility. But as for it being a negative message, I know I get into conversations with people who say, yeah, I think Christianity's behind the times. And I go, well, the message of Christianity is that we as human beings have this selfish nature. And when carried to its extreme, it's the reason we have war, crime, racism, bloodshed. Do you see any evidence that the world has outgrown those things? And of course, all we have to do is follow what's been happening in the news, not just the last few years, but the last hundreds of years. And we see examples of this sin. Now, the part about being a good person, this is where the church also blows it at times. They talk as though there's absolutely nothing good in us. It is true that we have a sin nature that is hostile to God and that we're born with this sin nature. It's also true, though, that God has given us a conscience. And in the conscience is this commentary, this running commentary on the way human beings interact. This golden rule of Jesus to treat people unselfishly is right in our conscience. I like to point out then to people that there's really no standard in the Bible that your own conscience wouldn't verify. And at that point, they realize, okay, yeah, part of me is good. That's great. That's fantastic. But I'm certainly not obeying my conscience 100% of the time. And the way I would put it to them is, do you obey your conscience as often as your own conscience is telling you you should? You see, then it's not between them and the Bible or them and God so much as them and their own conscience. Of course, that comes from God. What do you think?
Well, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, because that way, it really, when a person's conscience bothers them, it's nobody else pointing a finger at them.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Lorene, it sounds to me like you're doing a great job. It sounds like you're breaking the mold and not fitting the stereotype Christian to them. So the very fact that they're even talking with you about it says lots.
Well, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.